Welcome to Minority Corner
with an Eke
and James,
the Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues,
only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike.
This week on Minority Corner.
What you got cooking in your cauldron? It's October.
Okay. Ooh, it's a cauldron. Yeah. Ooh, yes. On this
it's October.
It's very festive. We're getting into the fall season on this spooktacular episode.
Well, do you want to use spooktacular yet? I feel like we need to get a little bit deeper into it.
Okay, you're right.
I don't feel the spookiness coming.
Fair enough. Okay, my spooktacular retracted. And you know what? You're right. You can only use spooktacular like once, and it's got to get heating up to Halloween.
Right.
So you're right.
We got to get through 4 more weeks of October before we can tackle some spooky
spooktacular
shit.
You're right. Well, on this episode 148, that's not spooktacular, but it is spectacular.
Yeah. Ooh, nice.
It is falltacular. It's a fall explosion.
All right.
Okay, too much. No one to quit, no one to hold him, no one to fold him. Well, Aneke, I saw Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 11/9.
Yes.
It is time to vote for your life, midterms or bust. I am giving you guys all, I'm going to give you a rundown of Fahrenheit 11/9, why it's so important. Please go out and see that movie and get armed with knowledge. But also, why the Republicans might actually win the midterms and what happens if we don't. Could this be the last election that we have? And action items that you can take. I have a low impact version and a high impact version ready to go for you. What's in your cauldron?
In my cauldron, I am cooking up some books. I got a book list for you guys to help you teach your kids about consent and to battle against toxic masculinity.
Ooh, necessary. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think in the master cauldron, what we might sprinkle in is some conversations about insecurity. Some finale just happened.
Yes, it did.
I just saw a Jane Fonda documentary, and I'd love to chat about that.
Yes, you did. And I got a new game that I think that we need to look at about sexy justices.
I am confused now about the ingredients in this cauldron.
It's gross.
That's how we make magic happen on this very falltacular episode of Minority Corner.
Let's go.
Ring, ring, ring. Hello, hello.
Why are you saying hello for me?
Miss Jasmine Felicia Jones, is that you?
What is this? Can you even hear me?
I'm calling for Jasmine Felicia Jones. Is that you, Jasmine Felicia Jones? Oh, I called Aneke.
Yes.
Oh, are we doing the podcast?
Did you butt dial me?
I thought I was calling my friend Miss Jasmine Felicia Jones Marquez Smith Smith.
Who are these people?
She's a woman I know. She's trying to get a bank loan, but she keeps getting denied. So
is this your new commercial that people need to watch out for that you've booked?
About your bank loans being denied?
I don't know. You said it's
no.
Finance.
For those of you who are just catching up with us,
and are very
episode,
confused because that was
as you should be. You're like, what the fuck is going on? I did. Nick is bringing up to the point that I got cast in a commercial. I can't say what it is. Because you can get fired from the commercial if you say what it is before it airs.
Oops.
But it's not about bank loans.
Getting denied by bank loans.
It's not that. Not at all. Aneka, we have much to discuss today.
We do.
And it is finale time.
Yes.
It just doesn't happen.
Yes, it is.
I am upset.
Why? Tell me.
Because the season finale of Insecure just happened.
Yes,
and
it
makes me so mad that their seasons are just 8 episodes.
It's too quick. This season felt
too quick,
didn't it?
Mm-mm. I agree. And I want to transpose this to, I don't know if that's the right word, but how many episodes does Sex and the City have? I feel like it's 13.
100.
Per season.
It felt like 100 episodes per season. Oh.
I feel like all their other shows I feel like most premium shows, they all go to 13 episodes
as
the magic number. And it just makes me so mad that Insecure, it just 8 is not enough.
Yeah, what about Crusty Ass Girls? What did that get?
Oh, I'm sure they were let's do one every week and just more and more. crusty girls.
Insecure was and is an excellent show that
so
needs to
good.
Be at least, at the very least, give us 10. I don't understand this.
10.
8.
I agree. Eight is just like, you're just getting going. And
right.
I feel like, here's my theory about what happened. What
Tell
happened
me.
Was, here's mm-hmm. what I think happened.
Okay.
Is that because it was this, you know, it was Issa Rae was doing Adventures of Awkward Black Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, she pitched it to HBO and they're like, okay, yeah, we're going to do it, but we're going to only give you 8 episodes because they weren't sure how it was going to do. Or
but it's
like,
done well. It's time to
exactly.
bump it up.
Time to bump it up. I only, unless it's like a thing that Issa Rae is like, I only want to do 8 episodes, which even then, Issa, I'm sorry, but we want more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
I don't
you can
think so.
Do 10.
I think that she would love to do more. I mean, come on, you get paid more money, you get to more exposure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you could do more. Like, I feel like they also have such a rich world of characters
yes.
that, like, I would love to get. Like, it's sad that, like, you know, Tiffany wasn't in the season finale because crunch for time, you know?
Right, exactly. Like, there are stories that I feel like that are kind of, like, dropped off because
yeah,
we don't get enough time. And characters, like, we're diving more into the background characters, like you said, with Tiffany, like, with Kelly. It would be cool mm-hmm. to find out about them. Even Chad, like...
I know Chad. Can we talk about Chad?
Yeah. He, like, has...
I love...
His backstory... Yeah, is always like leaking out, and it would be
yes.
fucking fascinating just to get his perspective too.
Mm-hmm, I agree. And like, can we meet his wife, fiance?
That would
like,
be tight.
He's always talking. Is anybody friends with her? Like, what is going on?
I know. Like, it is definitely one of those. They do a really good job with the writing, though, where you care
yeah.
about it. Like, you can have a bunch of people in the background and you can give two shits about them, but
mm-hmm.
they write these fascinating side characters that makes
yeah.
you want to, that you're not only intrigued in Molly and in Issa, but you're also intrigued in everybody else who's involved with them as well.
Almost like anybody who's ever had a line on the show, I'm always like, what's going on with them?
Exactly.
You know, like, whether it's the coworkers that Issa works with, or Lawrence's coworkers were all really interesting too.
Yes.
But like, you know, everyone, the worlds are so rich. So it's definitely like the writing and the casting and the directing. Also, shout out to Regina King, who directed the finale.
I love it. I love a transitional, an actress in transition into a new role.
Regina King just be snapping up all the things. I knew when I watched mm-hmm. her blowing it out in 7 seconds, which got canceled.
Mm.
But it didn't matter.
I had to stop
I knew
watching
she was.
It.
I knew that she was after an Emmy.
Yeah,
like
she
the
did
way
a good
that
job.
She was going in that performance,
yes.
and she got it.
She got
she
it.
She got it.
Well deserved.
She was like, show canceled, but I'm getting my award.
You yeah. know what? That's the way to do it. If your show is canceled, you need to go out in a blaze of glory with awards.
Glory. Winning it for someone. Can I say mm-hmm. I am really stoked about where Issa ended up at the end of season 3. Like, I feel
mm-hmm.
like
mm-hmm.
she's 30 and it makes sense. Like, when we first saw her, she was 28. And, like, mm-hmm. 28 to 30 is that return of Saturn period.
Mm.
And you're just kind of a mess trying to figure it out. High highs, low lows. You're, oh, yeah. It's,
mine
it's
was
known as your,
all right.
Oh, well, so, hey, it's not a blanket rule for everybody.
I always
but for
thought,
most
I thought
people,
Return of Saturn was 25, 26.
No, it's 28 because it takes 28 years for Saturn to return back to the place of origin.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's a 28. It's the year 28 and sometimes can last as far as to 30. And it's like the death of your old life and the rebirth of your new.
Okay.
And so you get really high highs and low lows. That's why there's a lot of like celebrity deaths that happen around 28 time
Seven.
As well.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you get a return of Saturn every 28 years. So don't worry. She'll be back.
I mean, I didn't get it the first time, so...
Okay. Well, I hope it doesn't make up for lost time.
I think mine's early. Like I legitimate for some reason thought it was like 26, 25, 26.
That's
so,
when your brain finishes forming.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. It's interesting, but that is so true. Like for her, it was messy, but she did come full circle. She set up her living room, which
oh,
I thought
right?
was beautiful.
I love that.
Like
and that song mm-hmm. called "Glow," I think it is.
It's a great
Spotify
song.
It's a beautiful. I had to snap it. Mm-hmm. A great month. Like she's getting her cute apartment. She's getting her, and it's just her. Like she
mm-hmm.
doesn't have a man defining her or that she's like obsessed with. She is like just doing her. I love it.
I love it too. You know what? Molly's been irritating me though.
Oh, go on. Yeah,
I just
I
feel
can
like
see
she's
that.
Been shady all season, and she hasn't really had any, like... Yeah, I like that Issa told her off, even though I do think that what she did was right with Nathan.
Right.
But...
I I would have also waited to tell Issa about the Nathan thing until, like, the next day.
Or I would have been like, Nathan was down here. Like, I would have gone up there and said, like, girl, Nathan was down here.
Oh, and then been like, but we're still going to go do this thing that I planned for your birthday. I don't want to fuck it up.
I mean, it sucks, but it's like, I don't know. And then at the other time, I'm not so mad at that. I'm kind of mad at her behavior at work because it's super disrespectful to her coworkers. Like, mm-hmm. the two women she was disrespectful to the guy she was disrespectful to. Like, when you're coming in new to a workplace, there's a certain way that I feel like you need to come in order to... give respect to people who have been there and then receive respect for being there. And she just like stomped all over them. And I'm glad that she is getting kind of like the push out and like alone, because that's what happens. Yeah. Like I'm a big proponent of being, when you're working in a, you know, not a solitary confinement, when you actually have to work with people, there's etiquette.
Yeah.
And she was rude as hell.
Yeah. I wonder if it's because she comes from like a very sort of white world that she was working in, where it is so, there isn't a sense of community. Because she's also working at a company too, where it's like, it's all black. And that's what you wanted, Molly, you know, to work at a black law firm. And there's more of a camaraderie at that law firm. And maybe she's not necessarily used to it.
I don't even want to put it on race, because I feel like it's just... I don't know. There's just a respect level.
I think it does for way where Molly is, when you're the only and you have to work twice as hard to get half as much, that for so long she's been that. And so I think it's just sort of ingrained into her work ethic, into how she's been operating. So it's hard for her to transition out of that when she's in the space that isn't necessarily about that. Because that was her last work environment, was that, where it was this dog eat dog. Everyone was kind of out for themselves. And I would imagine for herself, that's what she had to sort of adopt that.
I don't want to make any excuses. I just feel like I'm glad that that came up at the end, because I would hate for anybody to take any cues off of that, because it was just, to me, the whole thing was like, I'm very like, I don't know why. Like, that's one of those things that just kind of rubbed me the wrong way, is work environment. Like, I like a respectful work environment and like people to be respectful to me, and I'm respectful to other people.
Yeah, I guess I was actually more, I see that. I guess I was also just kind of miffed that like her male coworker, I felt like he wasn't acting really appropriately towards her as well and being very helpful. And I thought he was being kind of shady. And I thought it was like awful that he just kind of left her hanging on that project. Like I didn't think that was right on his end.
I don't know. I feel like we're just going to be back and forth. Because I don't know. I just,
but like,
when you're
isn't
new,
like, how
you
is that
defer.
Any better what he did? Like, he,
when you're new, you defer. Her, I feel like.
Yeah. I guess I wasn't really bothered by her work ethic. To a certain degree, I was like, oh, calm down a little bit. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I got it.
Mm-hmm.
I watched an amazing documentary about Jane Fonda, Life in 5X, on HBO.
Awesome.
And here's what I realized, the biggest, that like, Jane Fonda has such a huge place in my heart, and I didn't realize why until it all came crashing back to me. Mm-hmm. When I was 4 years old, or like five, when I was a kid, I used to do the Jane Fonda workout tapes with my mom.
Oh, right on.
And in fact, so much in fact that like when Jane Fonda started acting again, like when she was acting again, and like I didn't know anything about Jane Fonda as an actor growing up, because she stopped acting for like a good while. And then she was like in Monster in Law. And I was like, oh, that's weird. That exercise woman that I love so much, she's acting. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, wait a minute. She's been acting for decades.
Mm-hmm. it's just really fascinating. Her life is like definitely... she's had multiple lives.
Yes. Yeah. What's fascinating about the documentary is it's each act, the first four acts are all kind of defined by a man. So the first act is like Henry Ford, and then it was her next three husbands, and the last one is titled Jane Fonda.
Mm.
And so she's like, it's really beautiful. Like, she's finally coming into her own. Mm-hmm. And I find her story so, like you were saying, it's so inspirational. And she was talking about this on The View that like, for one, I love that we're doing a documentary about someone while they're still alive. Like, there's the Ruth Bader Ginsburg documentary. Like, I think it's great to celebrate people while they're still here.
Yeah, I agree. Like, the Quincy documentary is excellent.
Yeah. So I love that she's still alive and we're able to see what her story and what her journey is. And also it's just so inspiring because like her life is just, for her in her own words, has just gotten better as it's just continued to going on. And I think like in the things that she's doing now, she's doing more things than she was even doing back then. And like, she's had such a fulfilled, like a huge life. I appreciate her as like, she was doing something that was very revolutionary, like during the Vietnam War, of like speaking out and being an actor. And it wasn't very common for actors to speak out back then.
Right,
you know?
I know, yeah. It's been fascinating. And I saw that the documentary was on HBO and I wanted to watch it, but I've been a little hesitant because I actually listened to this podcast called You Must Remember This. And it's all about old Hollywood. And they took a whole season and they basically did her and another actress who I'm blanking on right now and did their whole life trajectory. And
wow.
And it was so thorough that I feel like, oh,
you're like,
you're
like, I heard this.
Yeah, but I also kind of want to see it because this is in her words. And I feel like there's something important about the agency of somebody's own voice, which is exactly like how I viewed the Quincy Jones documentary that was done by Rashida Jones, who just had a secret baby, by the way.
Secret's out, Rashida.
I know. But it's just fucking fascinating to see great lives, you know, like what you can accomplish in a life, and like what you said, celebrate them while they're still alive, while they're still doing things, while they're still being active and like actually creating, in the process of still creating and giving kind of hope that you can still, just because you're in your 80s doesn't mean that time stops, you know.
And I feel like Jane's been, she's been such like a lot of sort of first. And there's also like, it's a great, like watching her march with like Dolores like Huerta, like back in the day and then like even today. And, you know, she got a lot of flack by, you know, what happened in like with Vietnam and her approach to like, she went over there and whatnot. And it's just interesting because I don't think today the world is so different that I don't think she would have been given that same sort of flack. It just really, way to go, Jane Fonda. And thank you for all the work that, like, you have done. And she's been there as an ally to so many different groups, like, indigenous people, like, just, like, so many different groups of people. Like, she talks the walk of just, like, you know, like, I think that it was, like, her idea, like, in her new show, they didn't have to have, like, you know, that they adopted a black kid as well. But, like, I think it's important for her, like, to have things like diversity and storytelling. And I just really appreciate that.
Yeah, definitely. That's awesome. I have something I want to talk to you about.
Oh, should we be recording still? Is this, did I do
something? No. Oh. I think this is something that the world can, you know, listen in on.
Okay.
But I need your opinion on something, and it kind of goes along with all the controversy that's been going on.
Oh, okay.
There is a video game that developers are currently in the middle of creating. And it is called Supreme Courtship.
Okay, go on.
And
what? Is this a real video game? Are you Tony the Tigering me?
No, I am not. I am not. In this game, it's in early development. Okay. And it doesn't have a release date. And that probably should be put into question.
Is this by the people who did Slave Tetris?
It might be, but so basically it is a game to educate players about American government by letting them date Supreme Court justices.
Oh, damn it. That is, I should have known by the title that that's where this was going to go. And then I just thought it was going to be maybe more like, you know, trivia about Supreme Court people or
it's,
I don't know.
Yeah. So basically, I'm
so
going
like
to send
dating,
you this.
So you're dating like Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yes.
Ruth RBG. Jesus.
Yeah. I just sent you the link. You should open it up. So basically, okay. So they've aged down all the Supreme Court justices
to make them hot.
Yes, 20-something
oh,
hot people. Like,
oh,
for
Lord.
Example, Ruth Bader Ginsburg supports a ponytail and a sweatshirt that reads dissent. Okay. Sonia Sotomayor has a leather jacket. And Clarence Thomas wears a green vest with no shirt underneath.
Well, fuck that guy.
I know. So that's one of the problems.
I see this picture. Oh, he is looking too cute.
Look at them.
He is looking too. Sonia is looking fly.
I feel like it's kind of racist a little bit. They made the black guy and the Latina like way too sassy. Like, what is happening?
He's like, he looks like his voice is like, hey, brother.
I know. Get some justice?
I'm just Justice Thomas. Stop, he looks way cool.
So, of course, people are upset because of Clarence Thomas. Hello, Anita Hill. We covered this already. No one should be thinking about dating this criminal, especially when...
I probably put a pube on my drink.
Have you scrolled down? You need to scroll all the way down so you can see the picture where it goes. His quote is, how do I do it? I listen.
Oh, no.
Which is so bad.
Why is he wearing a green vest? He is too cool for school. He's got these muscles. Clarence Thomas never looked like this.
None of them look like that.
That's true. Who designed this? I feel like it was designed by like some company like overseas who doesn't really understand.
No, it's designed by an American guy.
Oh, God.
This guy named, Jesse Shepard. He worked for Apple, and before the 2016 election, he never really cared about politics. And then Donald Trump became president, and he was like, I need to do something, which is like...
Okay, and this is what he did.
Yeah.
Wow. You know what? Everybody takes up their arms in different ways, this was his choices.
Yeah.
I'm expecting some sort of, like, it looks like a cartoon that I would see on, like, ABC Saturday morning or something.
Yes, it's
like,
so...
We're the young justices getting justice.
So, of course, now things are real sticky.
Oh, my God. Ruth's quote is, I do my best work when everyone else is wrong.
See, what is that?
Oh, God.
This is dumb. So, I want to say to anybody listening, let's not support Supreme Courtship.
Yeah.
Because this is terrible.
It's really bad. It's really bad. So interested in looking at the gameplay, because I would like to... Is it like the... Oh, God, this is so fascinating. It's like The Sims or something?
No, you date them, but you also learn about their political standing and also, like, what they voted for in the past.
Who cares, though? Like, what is that going to do for me? I can't do nothing.
You're
it's
supposed
a lifetime,
to learn
like,
from this!
Well, I know, but it's like, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of ways to start getting involved in, you know, our civil, you know, duty and civil ship, or what is it called? Civics?
Civic duty.
Civic duty. And I just feel like, I don't know, the Supreme Court's, like, I feel like it's more, that's really good for people who are, like, or vetting to be, like, the Supreme Court nominees. But it's like, these people are already appointed. It's not like I can do anything about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but you kind of, I mean, it's kind of about, like, getting people involved
getting
in the Supreme Court and also knowing who's there and who's, like...
Who's doing what.
Yeah, and who's the swing vote and all that. It's actually pretty fascinating. And the one, and I will say, I used to be like, well, Supreme Court, you know, blah, blah, blah. But there's this other podcast called More Perfect, and it actually goes over a lot of different major cases that the Supreme Court voted for and voted against, and it's actually fucking fascinating because the people who get voted into the Supreme Court really do play a huge part on our future, you know?
Absolutely.
And that boils down to, like, all the way down to the local level. Like, you got to vote for your senators who will elect and will vote for, as we're seeing with Brett Kavanaugh, the frickin' they'll allow people to go into the Supreme Court, which is a lifetime position.
Appointment. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know? So I don't know if it's about learning it through dating them, but...
But hey, you know what? At least he's trying. So I'm going to give him the commit, you know what, the snaps for trying to get us interested in these justices. Maybe rethink the approach.
I like that. Rethink your approach.
Maybe we're on a roller coaster with them or something, just hanging out. Maybe we're at the beach playing frisbee.
Maybe let's not make Clarence Thomas like so sexy when he's a terrible person.
Terrible, terrible, terrible. Why Elena Keegan looks like Andrea Zucker from 90210?
Like
why?
What is happening?
She's so coquettish.
And why does Justice Breyer have a side, like, half of his head is shaved?
Yeah, he is looking too cool for school. Was this his look? And I would be curious as what the judges think. Well, some of them.
They probably don't give two shits.
Yeah.
They also apparently, I heard a rumor that some of them are way too old and like don't even pay attention. And like their staff are the ones that are making decisions. There needs to be a term limit.
There needs to be a term limit with many a thing. The same thing with our Congress people, term limits, which, yeah. Well, speaking of all this politics, I think you've teed me up for my corner, and yes. I think we need to get into it. Because you know what? It is time to vote for your life.
Oh.
Midterms or bust, people.
I'm ready.
This is it.
Let's do it.
Are you tired of trying to keep up with the news cycle?
Is bad stuff happening too fast for you to process?
Don't you wish there was an easy way to find out about only the most important info you need?
Hi. We're Lisa.
And Emily. Why don't you try our podcast, Baby Geniuses?
On each episode of our podcast, we discuss a weird Wikipedia page, such as
flatulence humor,
Clamato,
Catalan witches,
Clippy, the Microsoft Office helper,
death during consensual sex,
and the talking mongoose.
We ask each other stupid questions.
If you got a packet with like 300 seeds in it, what kind of plant would you choose the seeds to be?
That felt like you were assigned to ask me a question and there were certain words you weren't allowed to use.
We talk about Martha Stewart, her pony, and other celebrity horse news. Ben Chunch.
Every other week on Maximum Fun.
Baby Geniuses.
Baby Geniuses, tell us something we don't know.
Vote for your life.
Yes, I'm ready to vote.
And it's true. So I, because it's so much is at stake here. I saw Fahrenheit 11/9, the new Michael Moore documentary. I saw it this weekend. And holy fuck. It's like, you think you know, but you have no idea. This is the diary of how America got so fucked up in the last few years and what's happening behind the scenes.
There's like, so many pop references in the last minute.
I actually meant to use that for the Jane Fonda one too, and I was like, damn it.
Okay.
I was gonna be like, the Jane Fonda, you think you know. Well, same thing, you know what, to just go back to the Jane Fonda documentary, why I recommend watching it. You think you know Jane Fonda, but you have no idea.
This is
the documentary of Jane Fonda. Got it in. So Fahrenheit 11/9, a play on Michael Moore's hit documentary Fahrenheit 9/11.
Uh-huh.
And this is, I think, I've watched almost all of his documentaries. I think this is one of his best documentaries that he's done.
I've heard that.
Usually he has, like, there's a lot of comedy spruced out between it. This one, the first 20 minutes, and then I cried for, like, 2 hours. Like, dear God.
Wow. Oh, my God.
It's so, but it's like, but I also left feeling so empowered in the sense of, holy fuck. We've got to do something. He paints a really interesting picture. And it also makes me sad, though, because it's not doing too well at the box office. I think a lot of people don't even know it's out. There hasn't been, like, a lot of
I think there's a lot of fatigue going on, too.
Right, but we don't have the opportunity to have... We don't get to have fatigue.
Right, yeah.
You know? Because you and I talked about this after the election. We were like, listen up, people. This is it. Like, we don't...
Yeah.
We've got to, like, keep the... Because we're literally fighting for our democracy. You know, I heard some people who were like, oh, well, too bad the people who really need to see this won't see this. And I'm like, no, I don't think Michael Moore made this documentary for those people. He actually
made it for
liberal people. More so for us, because the documentary, it looks at, like, you know, how, what kind of happens leading up to the election and what happened, what's happened in the last few years. But also, like, it really takes a hard look at the Democratic Party. And
I think we definitely need to take a critical eye to the party.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And even things that, like, you know, like, he takes the New York Times and the Washington Post to task, and that...
Good.
You know, there's two different kind of, like, I think on both sides, there's the, you know, the conservative Republicans who are like, I just want smaller government, and then there's, like, the Trumpers who are, like, you know, far, far right, like, a lot of racist stuff going on over there. And, you know, on the liberal side, it's like, you know, there's the liberals who... have a lot of money. And mm-hmm. it's sort of this neoliberalism where it's like, oh, we've really
moderate.
We've handled everything. I like, you know, my money and my capitalism, yada. And, but mm-hmm. like the New York Times and Washington Post, like, you know, he brings us up that with, you know, Bernie Sanders, like they weren't covering how large, and this is the news media right. in general, how large his rallies were. They had an article where they said that he speaks for people his own age, which that was not true. They were skewing much younger.
But it's like, very much progressives are being shunned out by the old party Democrats.
Yes, exactly. And it benefits, you know, these, like, mm-hmm. it benefits the Wall Street liberals and the banking liberals.
The Nancy Pelosi's, the Dianne mm-hmm. Feinstein's. Oh, yeah.
He mm-hmm. takes Pelosi to task. And just to reiterate, it just makes so much sense of, like, what you were saying about term limits, of how mm-hmm. it's insane that we don't have them. And give Nancy Pelosi, see, don't take a break. Girl, you did it. You did your duty. Like, right. go do something else and let someone... I think that there was a time when she was doing really great stuff, but how could you not get fatigued? And then, you know, look at, like, Jeff Flake, who...
Yes.
He... The only reason why he took a stance to not vote, to let the FBI do their thing right, on Brett Kavanaugh's investigation mm-hmm. is because he's like, I'm not running for re-election. So he didn't have that fear going on. That's not good. And that just
shows
you...
That's not good at all.
That just shows you how much these politicians are afraid to take any sort of a stance because they're so afraid of re-election. Now, if they
Which
know...
Which is so crazy,
if they have term
James?
Limits where it's like, you know, a senator doesn't need to be in there for more than 12 years, two terms on senators, you know, maybe three or four on congresspeople.
This has been a thing that has been like frustrating me to no end lately when I've been really investigating senators and congressmen because yeah. I feel like they go under the radar because so yes. many people are so involved in like, oh, okay, you know, the president and like vice president, and then okay, then you go down to, oh, my mayor,
yeah,
and you just think of like senators and congressmen as just kind of like there, and
yeah.
we need to turn the tables. They are public servants.
Yes.
They need to serve our needs.
Yeah.
And there are so many people, and I hate to say this because I don't want to be ageist, but there mm-hmm. comes a time when you need to let the next generation come in and do what we're supposed to do.
Agreed.
Like, that's why there is retirement.
Yeah.
Like, Dianne Feinstein is in her late 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like... And it's again, like, you've done your service. Like, we appreciate
yes.
the work that you've
Thank
done.
Thank you.
Thank you. And take a break. Like, you can do other things as well as a pop. I mean, look at like Obama and Michelle and Barack, you know, they're doing other things and still being involved,
yes.
but taking a step to the side. But that's because they had to, because we have term limits. And so,
right.
Ooh, man, do
Let
we need to put those
new
term limits
guard
in?
Guard come in. Yep. Fuck.
Mm-hmm. Because then, like, again, like, you don't have to, if you've been in the politics game that long, you have to, you've been in, like, you've got so many people who are in your pockets, so we need
yes.
you out, you know, like, you
yes.
can't do your job. And like, he highlights, you know, people who are doing grassroots efforts, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez,
yes, at the Bronx,
in New York,
I love her,
in the Bronx. There's also Richard Ojeda, who is this white guy from Virginia, but he's so dope of like, he served in the military, but like,
yeah.
he is just so, you're like, oh yeah, like that's the kind of person I want leading. Like, he comes back and he's like, I fought for this country and I don't even recognize my country anymore, and he's
right.
fighting for the union workers, the little people. There's Rashida Tlaib in Michigan,
yeah.
who's just the first Muslim woman to be elected.
I love it. Let's not forget Beto O'Rourke, who's about to take out Ted Cruz, I hope. Fingers crossed. Oh, my God.
Fingers crossed. And then there was also this woman who I think it was in – it's somewhere in the Northeast, I believe. And she's like a chicken farmer. And
cool.
I loved it because
Scary.
If you put those people together, it's like that's America. That's mm-hmm. – you know, it goes back to your other point of, I'm sorry, but just like all these old white guys and even these – you know, some of these old white ladies, that's – We need an eclectic voice of the country. So
yeah, we need to diversify. And it's not even that the fact that they are older. It's yeah. the fact that they've been in there
for so
decades.
Long. Absolutely. Yeah. A huge part of the documentary that Michael Moore kind of actually looks at is actually, he looks at Flint, Michigan. I would say about 35 to 40% of the movie is actually about Flint, Michigan. And it's fascinating.
Which is fascinating because that's his hometown.
It's his home. Well, and also the genocide that happened in Flint, Michigan, happening underneath the guise of Rick Snyder, who is someone that Trump admires. And he kind of sets the game theme of like, look at what happened in Michigan, because this could happen to like the rest of the country. Rick Snyder was essentially able to declare a state of emergency. And this is before the water crisis even happened. And he had declared a state of emergency where he was then, and there was no state of emergency, but he declared, was able to declare one. And then he was able to essentially appoint his own people in the, as the heads of states in these, as essentially displacing the mayor.
Not good.
And so he essentially like was having this, you know, dictatorship in Little Michigan. And so then he was able to get this pipe coming through that didn't need to come through, but he was, you know, had his pockets were deep filled with all these other people who were going to benefit off of it. And, you know, and it was affecting mostly black communities. 10,000 children, we talked about this in the podcast before, but 10,000 children were affected with lead poisoning. And that lead poisoning is affected for generations. Like, it can be affected up to your grandchildren. So we talked about conspiracies last week. That was another one.
Yes.
There was also a military action that was conducted in Flint, Michigan, where they were doing military practices in Flint, Michigan after the water crisis. And they were doing military drills, and they did not warn the people at all. Didn't warn them. They're hearing machine guns, like all kinds of like crazy stuff. And so what Michael Moore is able to do is he paints this picture of like essentially, well, no wonder why Michigan, especially Flint voters, didn't show up. Why Michigan voters didn't show up. Like, I think Hillary lost by 10,000 and 8,000 black voters did not show up in Michigan. And they didn't, they felt like the government wasn't supporting them. Obama showed up, took us like wet his lips on that water and said it was fine to drink. And they were like, what? Like,
what the hell?
That was such a bad move on that man's part. I can't believe he fucking did it.
I know. I believe it. I mean, it's politics.
But it was
sucks.
And so again, like he, and so, and also like with Bernie Sanders, he had won, like in Virginia, he had won all the counties. And he, but then when the DNC came around, they gave, they split his delegates with Hillary Clinton, but giving her the more of the majority. So, and a lot of states were doing this. So then you had people who were like, oh, my vote doesn't count. So no wonder people were sitting out of the election. Hillary wasn't doing as much, like, she was fundraising instead of like going out to doing rallies like, you know, Trump was doing. And so he's able to really add up all this different variables. And he paints a very frightening picture of that this could be our last election. And I don't say this in a lightly. I'm a very optimistic human being. And I say it as a way to like, Michael Moore, do not discount this man. He wrote an article in July 2016 about how Trump will win. He wrote that article. He had already said it. And his exact game plan is what happened. And so I feel like this documentary is such a call to arms. It's a huge, huge wake up.
It's like, so true.
And we need to continue the work done by like Shirley Chisholm, Martha P. Johnson, Harvey Malcolm X.
Everybody that we've talked about.
Like everybody that we've been talking about for 148 episodes.
I know.
You know, now's the time because something that was really, you know, a Jewish newspaper back in when Hitler was elected had written, oh, you guys, don't worry. He doesn't really believe that stuff. He's not really going to go through with any of these things that he's saying. He just said it to get elected. We have a constitution. Like they had a constitution.
Where did they say, where was this coming from?
This was a Jewish newspaper. Like people didn't really believe that Hitler was as maniacal as he was saying, in the same way that people,
I just feel like I want to look into that. That sounds like, ooh, so ominous.
Watch the documentary.
It's
in the documentary. So what he is painting this picture of is that there's so many parallels right now to where Germany was and where we are. They're like, oh, the Constitution will protect us. You know, we have it failed them. They were very liberal when Hitler came around. There was, you know, queer people. They had a bubbling movie industry. They were highly educated. But, you know, you have one moment, like there, that fire that happened that burnt down their, you know, Congress place or whatever. And you're able to then start dismantling freedoms in the guise of, you know. And so there's two points that I want to try to drive at here. So, essentially, so what I want to do first is sort of say, like, to kind of corroborate, like, you know, why would Republicans actually win? Like, everyone's talking about the blue wave. But since 1982, Democrats have actually won the popular vote in all of the presidential elections except for 2004. And yet,
oh, wow.
You know, like, and so the, it paints this great picture. Like, the country is actually way more liberal leaning.
Right.
Like, more people are support stricter gun control laws. Gay marriage, education, and healthcare. Like, there's so, but yet they just keep stealing these elections. So, through gerrymandering. So why would Republicans possibly win? Even though we're talking about this huge blue wave, gerrymandering. Mm-hmm. So apparently Democrats need to win the national popular vote by 11 percentage points to secure a House majority. So it's like, we have to like do we have to work twice as hard to get half as much. Like,
which
we have
is
to do,
like, crazy. What is happening?
Why should we have to do that much more?
And I know.
So that means that we have to more than five times Hillary Clinton's 2.1 point popular advantage. So we have to come out like even more than we did
last. I know.
Which is crazy, because it's a midterm election that's going to be really challenging to do. The second point is there's 5 points. The base, the Republicans, mm-hmm. they show up. They show up in these midterm elections.
Yeah, we need Democrats to show up.
Yeah, yeah. And so much depends on voters who haven't cast vote in off year elections in 12 years. So those people who've sat these one out, and you've got like the Supreme Court who continues to just chip away at voting rights. So it's like, vote also while you still can. Because yes. They're chipping away at that. Money mm-hmm. being outspent, you know, as well. So money is also an issue that can come into it. Especially with, like, again, the Supreme Court has made it so much easier for, you know, just for our elections to be controlled by money and private interests, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Hacking.
God.
Hacking mm-hmm. is still, you know, Russia, they did it once. Do not think they're not going to be back again. And the fact that, like, you know, Trump won't corroborate what the FBI said that there was hacking. So.
Right.
And the delusion. We need to, the delusion that highly educated suburban Republican swing votes are going to be the savior. Fuck that. We need to stop focusing on these swing votes or getting the Republican voters who went to Trump. Fuck that. All we mm-hmm. need to do is charge up our side and get people out there to vote and get people out there to vote. Not only to vote, but be energized by it. Because when you're energized, you're going to bring others with you to
exactly.
vote.
Exactly. Just really understanding how much your impact is when you vote. It trickles down to all of these levels that we're seeing in chaos right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Your vote gets that senator in there who will be talking to whoever is being confirmed as a Supreme Court justice.
Right.
Your vote is going to make legislation happen at the local level and at the federal level.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we need people to understand that it isn't just a drop in the bucket. It's actually something that's building. It's a brick.
Yeah.
Your vote is a brick. And without that brick, that house is dilapidated.
Yeah.
So in order for the house to have a strong structure to support everyone, you got to place your brick down.
Yeah. Well, I want to, in being part of that energizing, I wanted to invoke like fear and concern into you. And now here's what you can do. And I have a low impact and a high impact. And it means in terms of like, not like the impact that you will be given. It's more of an exercise mm-hmm. term. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah, you're going back to your Jane Fonda workout tape.
See how much that woman has impacted my life?
A lot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you have no idea. So just because like there's actually been great momentum, and I want to make sure that we're keeping that up. Like 2017 was mm-hmm. a great year, especially with black women in general. Black
yes.
women, they mm-hmm. helped get Doug Jones elected to be the first Democratic senator in Alabama in 25 years.
Yes.
There are 39 black women who are nominees for the U.S. House in November in the midterms, including including 22 women who aren't incumbent. So I love it. These women were like, fuck this mess, and they went to work, you know?
Yes. I will say, though, look at the political leaning, because I mean, as much as I want to support all black women, there
some who are going to be in your best interest and some who are not.
Exactly.
Look like at the Stacey Dashes, like yes. you don't vote for them.
Yeah.
Remember she ran in like Compton.
And I'm glad that she fell on her face. But there's a woman, I'm blanking on her name. I know her. I think her last name is Owens.
Mm-hmm.
And she is Candace Owens. Yeah.
Don't be distracted by the picture and just be like, okay, she black. I think she'll do what she do. Know who they are. Know who they are. Peek behind the curtain.
Because Candace Owens sucks.
Sucks. Okay, you heard it here first. Okay. also, 2017, we put the Liberian. What was in Helena, Montana? There was a Liberian refugee who got the mayor's seat there. Six trans Americans were elected into office around the country. A black woman. Mayor of Charlotte, she won. Let's see. And there's, you know, so many great. There was Anna Pressley. She was the Massachusetts first black female congresswoman. Stacey Abrams, who we've mentioned, she's going for Georgia. This could be huge. So there's a lot of great stuff that black women specifically have been doing. Also, reading this article that black women have been organizing for black women. There's this, especially like in Alabama, who they helped get Doug Jones elected. And there's the Rose Pack, which stands for Raising Our Sister's Electability.
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah, because they were finding there'd be these black women who were running, but they weren't being supported because no one really knew about them or they just didn't have. So now they're kind of coming together and reaching also across state lines to help support each other. And they are kicking ass and taking names. Mm. And inspiring for going into this elections, millennials now make up 31% of the American populace.
I'm glad you said that because I really want to hammer that into all the people who are, let's just say, baby boomers and older generation X.
Yeah.
You guys keep using millennial as a term for young people, but I hate to break it to you, but millennials are now adults.
That's us. Yeah. We're actually controlling a lot of like, it's our turn. We're to start controlling the narrative, you know, And so, like you said, with making sure the baby boomers, we're actually an equal amount as the baby boomers. So come on. And, 69% of the baby, here's the thing though, 69% of the baby boomers voted in 2016, only 49% of millennials did. So, millennials, we've got to come out and we've got to vote because we need to tip the scales. We are the most diverse generation in American history.
Yes.
So here's the low impact level. Here's three things that you can do. And this actually comes from Shonda Rhimes. Shonda Land is a great website. I didn't realize it had all this stuff going on. She writes articles and things.
I love it.
Yeah, so this is low impact. I love it. It's very cute. Mm-hmm. And so essentially, like, there's ways for all of us to get involved as we're coming around to, like, you know, this last month before the elections. So number one, she says, make a commitment to yourself, to your friends, to your communities most affected by the Republican assault on our rights, that you will make the midterm elections a hobby this year.
That you will educate
yourself, educate others, donate what you can, money and time, share information and vote. And she's saying, you know, start right now to make that commitment. Go on the internet, tell everybody, I am making a commitment to this. Get it out there.
That's good.
Step number two. Oh, I think you're going to like this. You see, you and Shonda need to hang out. Guess what step two is?
I don't know. What is it?
Research.
Oh, nice. Good.
See?
Good.
So she said, Google your state Democratic Party and look at the candidates. Google who is my representative and find out what you like about them. And
perfect.
You can also head over to Emily's List, meet some of the badass women who are already running.
I love it.
A serious look at all of, like, you know, who the candidates are and what they stand for and which ones really. I mean, at this point, most of the primaries are already kind of done. So, it's kind of like backing at this point. Like, you know, there's smaller amount of candidates to back, but you definitely want to make sure that you know.
Yeah.
Especially because that way you need to kind of, we need to be evangelists for these candidates and saying, not only I'm voting for this person, but why? Because I think a lot of people don't understand what's happening in their state and local levels of all the different things that these people are standing for. Like, I found out too little too late that Cynthia Nixon wanted to legalize marijuana and give reparations of the tax money to black people. I wish I would have known that sooner because I would have been an evangelist about that and really speaking for her. So
it's about doing your research and staying abreast of all of the different discussions going on. So true.
And step number three, it's just an easy 1-2-3 step with Shonda. Take action. Share an article you find compelling. Start a conversation online about a candidate that you love. Send money to someone running that you're really interested for house. Sign up to volunteer organization that helps to get out the vote. So that's the low impact. That's the low impact.
That is low. That is not like heavy duty at all.
And it's something that I think like you can do, you know, you can do. And so right. I like the idea of it being a hobby. That's like, okay.
This I really like that.
And we're talking about 5 weeks here. So it's like, we can do this.
It's a quick you know? Hobby. It's very so quick.
Next one comes from Pop Sugar with this article, and it is called You're Registered to Vote, Now What? And so I'm taking some of the, I'm actually adding a little bit of some of my own sort of ideas on it. And so it's a little bit of a higher impact on this one. So this one is number one, I think with this one, you would take everything that Shonda said and you're going to kick it up a notch. So you're going to do the stuff that Shonda said and this as well. So registering other young people to vote. So you can look at your state's voter registration guidelines, and you can also go to Rock the Vote to make sure you know how to properly register people to vote. It's actually really simple. Anybody can do it. You can grab a friend. You can set up shop outside where the cool young people are hanging out, like the smoothie shops or the soda pop places.
Okay.
Or the roller rinks.
Yeah, yeah.
Where else are they? I don't know.
I don't know. Not those old-timey places.
But, you know, young people did this to me, and that's how I got registered to vote in New York. I was walking through Central Park, and they registered me to vote. And
awesome. That's good.
I don't know. I would have been able to, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, I don't have time, Go to the people. Go to get them to register to vote. Because it's just a numbers game. If we get more people to register to vote, we can do this. Also, if you're hosting any kind of an event or party or anything, have some voter registration stuff there.
Oh,
you know?
That's smart. Where can you get the voter registration stuff from, like the DMV?
Great question. So I think we'll put the links of this, but you can go to your state's voter registration guide and they'll have a link on how you can get some of those cards. But I think, yeah, the DMV, just make sure you go get the information on like how your state, so that way you're not fucking up someone's registration.
Exactly. That's, yeah.
So that's the only thing. Yeah. But it's such an easy thing just to always have with you if you're doing, again, any kind of event or party, make everything, making sure everybody is registered to vote if you come into contact with. The next one, you can phone bank or knock on doors for your favorite local candidate. State legislature is where the real change is being made. It's where a lot of things are passing, especially like bathroom bills or things that are affecting minority communities and LGBTQ communities and even just like immigration stuff. Like there's a lot of stuff that's happening more local. So you can check out Ballotpedia. And you can see who's running, see if there's anybody that's really getting you excited. You can Facebook message them or email them message them. And they need money and volunteers. Most of them don't have a lot of money, so they would love your volunteer support. And like a record number of LGBT people are running for office, like 400.
Wow,
and
that's
so
awesome.
What a great way to stand up in solidarity for our community members by helping to give them some time. So in canvassing, it actually works. Like it's the best way to increase voter turnout for candidates because oftentimes people have no idea who to vote for. I try to do my due diligence, but like this last primary election, I went in and I was like, wait a minute, for this category, I didn't even know this was a thing. So I had to like Google it really quick. And I just was like, well, I mean, people make snap decisions. And sometimes it comes down to like, oh, well, Shalise did call me. Her office called me. Okay.
Right.
I'll vote for her.
Yeah.
And the fact that that's sometimes all it takes. So like your phone banking or getting out there, handing out pens, like it makes a difference.
That's true. The names stick in people's heads.
Right? Because people just like, I get it, we're so busy, we don't know, and there's so many offices that people are running for, so just be that name and a face.
Right, it's so true.
Really quick, just a few, three more. Spread the word on social media. This helps with voter turnout, especially for younger people. Following candidates that you're into, like you're following Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, help get their message out.
Yes.
Retweet their message, their stance on things. You could Facebook Live, Instagram Live of why you're really into them, why you're really voting for them. Just getting the conversation out there. Like it kind of needs to be a constant conversation just so, you know, people are just talking about it, knowing what different people are standing up for. Because again, that name recognition of like, oh, okay, I know her. I've heard someone talk about her. Okay, I'll vote for her. I know some things about her.
Plus, it's more positive to share something about a politician that you support and believe in instead of...
fuck this guy.
Right, exactly.
Spread the word through hangouts. Like, other black women have been going to like hair salons to talk politics and midterm issues and registering voting. So yeah, go to where your people are. And last one, donating money, especially if you don't have time to, if you're not able to give your time, mm-hmm, money, if anything that you can give, especially like, so let's say you're in a blue area. You're like, oh, everything's pretty taken care of. Well, you can help support people like Beto, who's running, yes, against Ted Cruz.
I just donated to Beto.
Ooh, see, Nick, you getting all the snaps, mm-hmm, see, leading by example.
I'm doing, and my, so, thing,
see, and so yeah, especially those people that are in those battleground places where we can really turn things around, giving them your time and your money. Oh, and this one from me, take care of you.
Yeah.
And I don't mean just, you know, wine nights, but because if this is your new hobby, this new hobby can be exhausting. So, mm-hmm, eating healthy, taking media breaks when necessary.
Yes.
No social media or news an hour before bed. Do not do it. Don't do, yeah, it.
I would just say hang out with friends too. I recently just hung out with a group of good friends. We have this group. Once again, I'm going to pump it. I really suggest that you guys do it.
Ooh, I love this group. Yes.
Is the self-care ladies group, where, mm-hmm, we get together once a month. We pick a charity to donate $10 each to, and then we bring a $10 gift to do a little Secret Santa, even though it's not Christmas time, for each other, usually like a face mask or whatever you want to do. And that way you get a little self-care, and then you're also helping somebody else, and it's a good way to recharge. Like, yeah, I just had one last week, and we, even though we had planned it beforehand, it just worked out perfectly that after all of this confirmation brouhaha, yeah, it was nice to hang out with a bunch of people that I trust and love and do something good for ourselves and someone else.
Yeah, beautiful. I love that idea. Mm-hmm. I think that's so amazing that you ladies are doing that. And along those lines, I am also a huge, I am always pushing this, meditating, therapy, exercise, yes, plenty of rest, because we need you all, your physical and mental and healthiest best.
Mm-hmm.
And also laugh while you can,
yeah,
because they might take that away from us. But essentially, you know, the entire thing is just like, it's so important for us. We can't get fatigued or exhausted. We've got to, it's the home stretch. So doing everything that we possibly can, because the worst thing it would be is that, you know, Trump, and he's joked about this, not having a 2020 election.
Yuck.
And we would then look back and be like, damn, I wish I would have done a little bit more. So if we can all kick it up a notch and all do everything that we can, we have to fight for our democracy, because it's in jeopardy and it's in danger, and no one else is going to fight for us. We have to do it.
Agreed.
I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne, and justice is within your reach.
My mom refuses to take my phone calls.
My boyfriend says I should take our cats with me to graduate school, but I think he should keep them.
In the court of Judge John Hodgman, justice rules.
My partner's board game collection is out of control.
My sister won't stop stealing my clothes.
I'm Judge John Hodgman. I'm tough, but fair. I'll bring you justice, and I'm only a click away.
Tipping, automotive etiquette, siblings, roommates. If you've got a case, go to MaximumFun.org/JJHO. Judge John Hodgman is tough, but fair. Subscribe to the podcast today.
Judge John Hodgman rules. That is all.
All right. So I have
Aneke, what you got cooking up?
I got a book list.
Ooh, yes. I love an Aneke book list.
Yeah, and it's very appropriate. This is from, it was sent to me by Corner Kid Stephanie G. Super
it takes
important.
A village.
It is from bookforlittles.com, and basically it's a list of books that helps you talk to your kids about toxic masculinity and consent. And I thought that this is really important, especially with the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation and all of this, like, how did we get to this point? How did, you know, all of this, like, teenagers not knowing boundaries, raping, awful assault, yeah, that will last for 30 to 40 for your whole life, you know? So let's curb it early. And let's read some books to your kids that won't be heavy-handed, that are actually really sweet and beautiful and a great way to teach boys and girls that, you know, this is appropriate behavior. This is okay to look at people this way. You know, different ways to kind of like not say like this is toxic masculinity, but actually being like, no, this is okay for you as a kid, you know? So I'm gonna give the link, but I just wanted to cover five separate books because these are the ones from the link that I that stood out to me, and there's many, many more on the list, and there's also some books that you might want to either avoid, or if you have them and read them to the kids, use it as a like a teachable moment. Like
Which ones are those?
I'm not gonna say them.
Oh.
James.
Well, I just was wondering so we can like be weary of those ones, so we can know.
This is what I was gonna say. I'm very much like, yeah, you can avoid things, but I also like the idea of encountering them and explaining them. Like, for example, I watched a lot of Disney movies growing up, and a lot of them have problems. And it wasn't like we avoided them. We just watched them, and then we had a conversation about it. And,
So you're saying if it comes up, then it's a conversational point to talk about
Because I think that you don't want to shelter kids. You want to expose them to it and then teach them ways to address it and deal with it. So these are the books, though, that are celebrated, and I think that they're great. Okay, so the first one is called Tough Guys Have Feelings Too by Keith Negley. And so this book, the cover is like a wrestler, and he's looking over his shoulder and he looks a little down. And the description on Amazon says, a boldly illustrated picture book read aloud about how everyone gets sad. Ninjas, wrestlers, knights, superheroes, everyone, even daddies have emotions. Did you know that wrestlers have feelings, and knights, even superheroes and ninjas feel sad sometimes? In fact, and it goes on to say, basically, it's just emphasizing that tough guys, quote unquote, men, it's okay to have feelings, you know?
Surprise! Yeah. Who knew? Yeah. Who knew? What? Wait, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So I thought that that was a really sweet way of emphasizing, you know, that whole tough guy image. You can still be tough, but you can also still get sad sometimes, too. So I love the idea of emphasizing like really tough people like knights and wrestlers and ninjas, and then squeezing in dads, that it's okay for them to have feelings. And it tells little boys not to suppress their feelings, you know?
The craziness starts coming out because they don't know how to express their feelings, and it comes out in very terrible ways.
Exactly. Okay, the next one is called Real Cowboys by Kate Hoffler, and is illustrated by Jonathan Bean. And it goes, the Amazon description says, in Kate Hoffler's realistic and poetic picture book debuts about the wide open West, the myth of rowdy road, rough riding cowboys and cowgirls is remade. A timely and multifaceted portrayal reveals a lifestyle that is diverse as it is contrary to what we've come to expect. And to kind of emphasize that, the cover of this book is this beautiful illustration of a cowboy feeding a baby cow, like bottle feeding a baby cow, which is something that you don't really see. Like, it's not always about, like, a lot of times when people talk about like, oh, men have feelings too, they cry, that's a part of it, but it's also men can be very caring and tender,
nurturing.
And taking that image of a cowboy who, like, literally cowboys took care of cows.
Yeah. We talked about in the podcast, the black cowboys and the vaqueros. That was their job, was to tend to cows.
Exactly.
They weren't, like, shooting Native Americans and shit.
Right. So it's another great kind of tender, sweet way. And also, I like how they emphasize that it's not just cowboys. It's cowgirls, too. But it's also showing that, you know, men can be caring and loving and tender just like women are portrayed. So I really love that picture book because it's all of these things are just plain stories, but they are they're really kind of emphasizing a different type of thought pattern that I think we need to curb to correct a lot of this behavior. Stop it early, you know? The next book that I really like, it's called Little Robot, and it's by Ben Hatke. And the Amazon description says, when a little girl finds an adorable robot in the woods, she presses a button and accidentally activates him for the first time. Now she finally has a friend, but the big bad robots are coming to collect the little guy for nefarious purposes. And it's all up to the 5-year-old, armed only with a wrench and a fierce loyalty to her mechanical friend, to save the day. Now, this book is on the list because it's basically teaching little boys and girls that girls, and the little girl is a little girl of color. She looks like a little black girl, that, you know, that they can be engineers and their feelings are valued, you know? So kind of breaking that mold, like little girls can have wrenches and work on robots too, you know? So
totally, yeah.
Changing that perception a little bit. I thought that that was great. And number four, this one's really cute. It's called I Like It When by Mary Murphy. So the young penguin in this board book edition of Mary Murphy's perennial favorite likes holding hands, dancing, eating new things, reading, and having all sorts of fun with an affectionate and caring older penguin. Perfect for little ones and for ones they love. So this one is great because it's a covert way of teaching consent.
Right.
This is, yeah, it's teaching little kids to say, hey, I like this. You know, which the antithesis is, I don't like that.
Right.
And
yeah.
And I think it's appropriate that they show it with an older penguin too. So that they can get the picture of, okay, this is appropriate behavior. This isn't appropriate behavior. I think a lot of times we force little kids to like, go hug that person. Go do this, you know?
True. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah. When it's like,
accept that hug from this person.
Right.
It's like, oh, well, so you're right. We don't actually really teach the idea of consent at all when they're kids.
Yeah. So we as adults need to model it. Like if a little kid doesn't want to give you a hug, you as an adult need to be okay with that.
Oh, that's true.
You know?
Do not be all up in your feelings.
Yeah,
because
some little kid.
Little Johnny J. Joe doesn't want to give you a hug because he's not into it.
Yeah, calm the fuck
down.
He don't
know you.
Be nice to the little kid, then he may want to give you a hug. So we need to start teaching consent in those ways, you know?
I think that's a good point, too, to even make, too, is like something that I like asking the young kid, hey, can I give you a hug? And then giving them a hug.
Right.
Like, you know?
Yes.
A good call.
Yeah. So that, and it's super cute, and this one's for little kids, so it's a board book, so that one really kind of starts it early.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the last one that I want to bring up is called Elmwood Bigfoot Wanted Birdie Friends by Jill Esbaum, and it's illustrated by Nate Ragg. Now I like this one because I love a goofy ass weird book. And
yes, you do.
I do. And this one, the Amazon description is, Elwood Bigfoot is big, clumsy, loud, and lonely. It's hard for him to make friends, especially with the tiny, delicate birdies he loves so much. Each flash of their feathers, each chirp and cheerful song helps him feel less alone. But whenever a birdie swoops by and Elwood hollers at it to stay, the scared creature flies away. He tries everything, sitting on a branch, having a housewarming party, even building an amusement park with snacks and pools. But nothing helps until Elwood finally learns how to make his bird dreams come true. So I think a lot of people need to read this book.
I was going to say, yeah, that sounds like, where can I get a copy of this?
I know. So basically, this is, in its own way, is teaching kids and adults to fucking chill the fuck out and let people
calm down. Friends
with you when they want to be friends with you.
When they want. Yeah. Right. Well, because then I feel like this is like, you know, like the kids who then go shoot up a school or something because they felt
left
like,
out,
you know,
and lonely, you know?
Right. And it's just, yeah, there's a lot of things to unpack there, but that's the thing that kind of jumped out to me when you were describing this book to me, that made me think of like, yeah, people will come to you when it's right and calm down.
Yeah. And if they don't want to be friends with you, that's okay. You know?
Yeah. Then you didn't want to, you're lucky because that's probably not the right, that's not the right person you want in your life anyways. You want someone who's going to love and appreciate you for you when the time is right.
Exactly. So, and the book is super cute. Elwood Bigfoot looks like a big old silly monster with one tooth. and he's like dressed like a Canadian Mountie. So like, I not only like all of these books that I picked, like there's of course there's going to be serious books out there that will teach about consent and toxic masculinity, but these I like to hide my vegetables in my fruit sometimes. So it's
put a little sugar on those that broccoli.
Yeah, it makes medicine go down, you know?
That's what this podcast is. Yeah. That's why we're just like, don't forget the, you know, poop jokes here and there.
Yeah, have some fun. And those are the, especially if you read them over. And when you have a kid, you read books over and over and over and over again. So these stories.
And it gets into your head. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, recycle, reduce, reuse. Exactly. All up in my head because those dinosaurs were recycling.
Yes. So might as well start them early with these excellent messages, you know?
Can I add, I always love your book list for kids because I always want to get up in those books as well. And I got a little nephew, I'm buying him these books too.
Good.
And I also really love this list because I mean I'm a huge champion for teaching men what it means to be men or what like mm-hmm. what does that actually mean, because you know we need to teach men, like men are the ones doing the assault and the raping, so it's not that I don't like need to ask these young women or these girls to make adjustments, because that's it's not on them right. to make that to change this up. And so what I love is that these books are I love these books. I yeah. just I'm so glad that they're there because it's putting the education where it needs to be.
Yeah, and I really want to emphasize too, because I've noticed this a lot recently. Yes, we need to put the emphasis on you know men and behaviors of that, but we also need to look at parents. A lot mm-hmm. of time, mm-hmm. mothers and fathers will emphasize behavior in little boys that will lead mm-hmm. to another area. You know,
yeah. Well, you know, they had this woman, this group of women and talking on CNN. I don't know if you saw the clip, mm-hmm. but they were talking. They literally, it makes me cringe thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And they were like, I mean, they were like, boys are just going to be boys.
Right.
And excusing the behavior of Brett Kavanaugh.
Exactly.
No, that is not.
That is not okay. And it's not feeding into the culture, and it's putting their daughters into vulnerability because they're allowing this with their sons.
Yeah.
So read these books, learn something yourself. Fix yourself. Fix your kids. Because I can't blame kids. I literally cannot blame kids up until 18. I hate to say this, but it's the truth.
Oh, I agree. And then after 18, then I can turn my finger around and be blaming them. Mm-hmm. But until then, gotta look at the parents.
It's the truth.
Fix yourself. Fix the kids.
Yes.
I think that's going to be a book that you're going to write
fix
one
yourself,
day.
Fix yourself, fix the kids.
Fix yourself, fix your kids. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm going to actually link the Amazon links this time so you can go right ahead in the show notes, get those books right away. And then also the list if you want to look more into some of the other books that are listed as well. So happy reading. This is the end,
I'm pumped
my
up.
Friend.
I am pumped.
This is the end. Yeah, we're going to vote. We're going to read.
Yeah, I feel pumped up because honestly, I watched that Michael Moore documentary and I was like, oh, what are we going to do? And then between your conversation, mm-hmm. the conversation we had here, and also like there's something that you've always been a champion of these people. And I too, mm-hmm. I work with them, but you, the youth
oh, yes.
are dope
these
as fuck.
People.
You're a big fan of these people. You may have heard of them. The youth.
I like the youth.
And
they know what they're doing,
because you know the focus is on the Parkland kids as well, and they organized like the second largest protest that has ever happened in this nation, like in most recent lifetime, with that
those kids are doing for, like, it. I'm proud of those kids.
Oh, and some of these kids will be voting in this next election. And there was a really dope thing that they did. There was some, I think he was in Maine, he was somewhere northeast, some governor or senator or something was spouting off of the Twitter saying something like homophobic or racist or something, as sometimes they do. And the Parkland kids organized on Twitter that someone needs to run against this guy. And they were blasting out what he was saying. And this woman got in and like just enough time, the signatures, this happened in 2 days, in like a day and a half time span. She got in and made the cutoff to run against him. And he dropped out of the race.
Wow.
In 1.5 days, they got this guy to drop that out in the new
so
person.
Good.
So it's like things like that give me hope, but it's like
yes.
But it takes work. We've got to show up and we've got to do it and keep marching forward. So we can't sit back and watch eat bonbons, you know?
It's so true. Yeah. We definitely need to be right there with them. I really want to give a shout out to those activists, the Parkland activists, because they are doing it. I mean, like, David Hogg is on there doing stuff, being out there, posting things.
Yeah.
Like, I love it.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Way to go. There is hope for the future. So, I just want to say, I was going to give our review of the week, and we don't have one.
For all, you know, same for Twitter.
Y'all getting quiet, chirp. Sierra's Sierra's
quiet.
Crickets are louder than our corner kids.
Well,
it's crickets for the kids, corner kids. So we would love it if you write a review. Write a review on iTunes. It helps people to find us.
Yeah.
We haven't had a review since August 23rd.
Okay.
It's been a while. We like a little love.
If you want to, we appreciate it.
If not, I get it. You're busy. You're out there canvassing, phone banking, buying books, reading the books to the kids, writing your own books. I get it. You're busy. But maybe write a review of, like, they inspired me to do all these things. So I won't be mad at that. Won't be mad at it.
No. And, you know, if you have any questions, any concerns, any conversations you want to start, you can tweet at us at Minority Corner. Corner spelled with a K.
Yes.
We are there looking at it all the time.
Absolutely. And if there are other ways that you find, as the elections are heating up, feel free to join in the Minority Corner Kids playground. And if there are candidates that really need our help, if there are other ideas that we didn't discuss on how to get involved, anything that's revving up to the election, I think that is a great space to be, an energizing space of information for us to get out there and rock this vote and save this damn country.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's so true. Actually, I just found something.
Oh, what'd you find? Look at you. Aneki, always the researcher.
Tweet.
Oh, okay.
This is from...
They must have heard us speak of the tweeter.
This is from @TonyMikaBear, which I feel like is your whole name, so I'm sorry, but that's your Twitter handle. and it says, @MinorityCorner. The why women kill thing reminds me of that one Glee episode. So we're talking about, is that Mark Cherry?
Yeah. Oh, that Mark Cherry show that I'm like, fuck you, Mark Cherry.
Yeah. So they wrote, the why women kill thing reminds me of that one Glee episode where the Glee girls make fun of Coast Beast getting beat up by her husband. And as an apology, they all sing the Cell Block Tango.
Oh.
And if even Glee acknowledged that is twat behavior, ..
Truth. Yeah.
So problematics. You know, we need to keep an eye out. Always do your side eyes. So
keep those side eyes ready and available, because even your hero Ryan Murphy can misstep a few times. So
Keep those side eyes activated.
Activate your side eyes to the left.
Yes.
Well, it has been such a great time hanging out with you, my lady love.
Yes.
My love of the night.
It has been
love of the
excellent.
Night. And thank you all for continuing listening. Big shout out to Woody, our editor. We couldn't do it without you. And
oh my God, thank you. Putting in the work this episode.
Yeah, we had a lot of edits that needs to happen. So thank you. Big shout out to Brian at Brownout. Thank you for the music.
Keeping us hip.
Keeping us hip and a hopping and at the ice cream parlor where the kids be hanging out and the roller rink.
Wow. And, okay. And you want to be thought of as young, James.
I am young and hip and cool. You know what? I don't know any of the words to Cardi B's music, and that's how I knew I was an old man.
No. You don't know?
I
knew. You need to get with it.
I got shoes. I don't own you, Cardi B.
You know what? All you got to do is easy is drip, drip.
Okay.
Drip.
Drip, drip. Oh, see, I'll just do that one. See, and then I'll win all the karaoke things.
The read this ain't.
Do they know the words to things?
Yes.
Well, nope. The read this ain't. So there it is.
You know what? You can listen to both. You got two different types of blackness,
both,
right?
Okay.
There, you know?
You can watch How to Get Away with Murder and you can watch Scandal. You can watch Scandal and watch, what was that Gabrielle Union show that we didn't watch?
Being Mary Jane.
You can watch that too if you want. It got canceled, but you can watch it.
And thank you to all of our listeners, old and new, for coming back and listening. And thank you for listening to Minority Corner.
Because together,
we're the majority. Have a good week. Love y'all.
Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.